Chapter 6 When Hammer Falls.
"Ye going out today?"
Brunner asked Drizzt one morning late in the month of Hammer. Drizzt shook his head.
"No more,"
Catibri answered from behind him as she walked up to join the two.
"Our enemies have tightened their grip on the tunnels about the lower levels," Drizzt explained. "Unless you know another way for me to get out into the Underdark, we'll not be leaving Mithril Hall any time soon."
"Might be that we could get out to the surface," Brunner offered.
"Like last time,"
Catibri sarcastically answered.
"Nah," said the dwarf. "Just the four of us, yourselves and me and Athrogate, out quiet in the night."
"To do what?"
Catibri asked.
"I've been thinking the same," Drizzt unexpectedly put in, and Catibri turned her surprised expression to him. "But alone, just me, perhaps I can find ways to sting our enemy and make their wintertime siege even more unpleasant."
"I was thinking more that we might get to Felbar or Adbar," Brunner explained. "Ain't heard a thing from 'em since we last met in Emerus's hall. No doubt but they're faring worse than us, especially me brothers in Adbar. They've been living their winters on trade, so says Conorad, but now there's none to be had."
"Unless they opened the way to Felbar," Drizzt offered.
"Ye don't believe that, Elf."
Drizzt couldn't disagree.
"There's no point in going out," Catibri offered. "Not now. The snows are blowing deep. The wind will freeze your bones."
"The snow will provide cover for me, and you can protect me from the cold," Drizzt replied.
"And the dragon?"
the woman answered.
"We cannot just sit here, girl," Brunner roared suddenly. "Three dwarven armies stuck in their holes while the cities fall and them orcs tighten their fist about us. We cannot have it, no. I need to know of me brothers. Conorad needs to know what's what in Felbar and Adbar. How is he to plan blind?"
"I can get there," Catibri said. "To Felbar, at least, where I've been only recently."
The other two looked at her curiously.
"Drow Elf Ranger can't cross the tunnels, but yourself can?" Brunner asked doubtfully.
"With spells," Catibri explained. "Clairvoyance and clairaudience. I can send my eyes and ears to King Emerus's court, I think."
"Well, why didn't you say so afore now?" Brunner demanded.
"I'm not very good at such divination magic," the woman admitted.
She remembered her days in Lady Avalir's coven in the floating Netherese city called Shade Enclave. So many of the sisters there studied the divination spells diligently. They thrived on information. But Catibri had little interest in that school of magic. Ever had she preferred invocation, throwing fireballs and shaking the ground with thunderous bolts of lightning.
"Can ye do it or can't ye?"
"I can try, but I'm never certain of what I see."
"If your eyes are there, you're seeing what you're seeing," said Brunner.
"It doesn't work like that," Catibri replied. "Divination magic is interpretive. Bits and pieces of information, some true, some inferred, some wrongly perceived. It is an art form, and one I did not learn as I should have."
She looked from Drizzt to Brunner and nodded.
"But I will try."
"Can't be asking for more, me girl," said Brunner.
He moved over and put his hand on Catibri's shoulder, but turned to regard Drizzt with a wink.
"And see what ye might see up above while you're at your spell casting. Might be that me and the elf can find us some fun outside the hall, eh?"
Tears in his eyes, Regis gently piled the last stone on the tomb he had built for Wulfgar. The halfling's shoulder ached, and blood still streamed from the wound. He knew that he didn't have much longer before he succumbed, but at the same time he had no idea what to do.
He had gone back the way they'd come, into the large sandy chamber, and had found no promising outlets. Indeed, everything seemed to lead back to where they had been, where the orcs and dark elves had been. The other way, down this side tunnel where Wulfgar had cracked his skull, the corridor dived, and the air grew thick with moisture. Around a bend and down a chute, Regis had been led by the sound of water, dropping like a heartbeat, occasionally splashing. He hadn't gone farther, figuring that anything lurking in underdark ponds wasn't something he would wish to engage. But now he had to go there, he told himself. And he had to do so decisively and straight away. He was running out of time. He assumed the form of a goblin shaman once more and started off, hugging a wall in the slick corridor. He heard the water again, dripping, the cadence too fast for a normal heartbeat, but too slow for his own at that moment. Around the next bend, the halfling found himself in more complete darkness, and before his sensitive eyes could fully adjust, he inadvertently dipped his foot in the water. Running water. It was an underground river, not a pond. Regis knelt on the bank and spent a long while allowing his vision to acclimate. Gradually, he could make out the flowing water, a wide and yawning river. There was some lichen on the opposite bank, revealing a wall that marked the end of this cavern. He dipped his hand in the flow. It was not strong. Slowly, crouching all the way, he made his way to the end of the cavern to the right, where the water exited, and left to where it entered. To move beyond this place in either direction meant going into the river, likely even under the water. Regis glanced back the way he'd come, back in the direction of Wulfgar. He couldn't go back, and he couldn't stay here. He put his hand in the water again. It was chilly, but not too cold. "By the gods!" the halfling whispered. He removed most of his gear and his clothing, tucking all of it into his magical belt pouch's extra-dimensional space. He pulled his dagger back out almost immediately, but looked at it forlornly. The snake blades had not yet reformed. Back in went the dagger, and out came the rapier, which he tucked under his belt, opposite the pouch. He was taking too long. The pain in his shoulder reminded him. With a last glance back, Regis steeled himself and went into the water, finding it to be about waist deep. He started downstream, but quickly reversed, thinking that if the current increased, he would not be able to return to this place. To the left he went, soon coming to the small chamber's wall. He shuddered. He knew what he had to do. Half swimming, half crawling in utter blackness, he moved only his right hand forward, keeping his left pinched in tight against the wound. He couldn't see the blood staining the water around him, but he knew it was there, and knew, too, that marine predators could often smell blood. It was almost too much for the poor halfling. At one point he tried to stand up, but found there was no room between the water and the ceiling. He continued along stubbornly, and still the ceiling pressed in on him, not enough room to stand, not even enough for him to turn around and catch a breath. Was there even a point to this, he wondered. For surely he had already gone far beyond the distance that anyone without Ganassi blood could possibly cover. He was out of options. He was surely doomed. But then Regis saw a flicker of light up ahead, just a reflection of a reflection, and nothing substantial. It was gone even as he consciously registered it. Lichen, perhaps? The halfling drove ahead against the meager current with all the strength he could muster. Then he saw more lights, flickering and dancing as they entered the moving liquid. He pressed ahead, and now even his deep diver lungs were beginning to ache for air. The lights were all around him, and he barely resisted the urge to spring up when he realized they were torches. Slowly he moved upward. Goblins? Orcs? Drow? He peeked out, and his heart lifted. These were not his monstrous enemies, but men and women, humans and elves, and even some dwarves, a large encampment. Regis stood and whimpered, and some nearby men spotted him. Their eyes went wide, but no wider than the halfling's smile. Regis's smile disappeared when a wall of spears came flying at him. Catty Bree splashed her hand in the water, shattering its stillness, her frustration mounting.
She had created the scrying pool perfectly, and yet her spells would show her nothing more than her own reflection. She heard Lady Avalier's voice in her head, scolding her for her stubborn focus on explosions and battle, when information and knowledge were the key to true success. With a sigh, the woman walked from the scrying pool, pushed through the curtain, and fell into a comfortable chair in front of the burning hearth. So many thoughts swirled in her mind. She knew that Drizzt and Brunner would indeed go out into the blizzards, and yet she couldn't even glance up there magically to guide them or forewarn them. She felt helpless. She felt useless. What had she done wrong? She felt the divination magic still burning within her, and yet she could not see the halls of Citadel Adbar, or peer through the whiteness of winter above, or glance into the throne room of Felbar, which she knew quite well. She visualized it again in her mind's eye, remembering her last visit there. She thought of Emerus and Ragged Dane and Parson Glaive. She stared into the hearth, into the flames. Without even realizing it, she clenched her hand on the powerful ring Drizzt had given her. A subtle peace washed over her, a feeling that the fire in the hearth, that all fires were one, reaching back from the prime material plane to the elemental plane of fire, all connected. The image of Felbar's throne room appeared to her, but distantly, hazily, behind the flames of the hearth. Catty Bree sucked in her breath and leaned closer, staring and listening. She was there, in the flames of the fire burning in King Emerus's hearth. She could see the old dwarf king and his advisers.
"We're to lose him, I fear," she heard Emerus say. "He's young and reckless, that one," agreed another.
It sounded to Catty Bree like Parson Glaive, but she couldn't really see him and didn't know him well enough to be certain.
"Young and heartbroken for the loss of his twin, you mean," said Ragged Dane, sitting beside Emerus. "And desperate," King Emerus agreed. "Adbar's feeling the hunger more'n ourselves, and all in Felbar of bellies grumbling. Can't hold. Not for them and not for us." "Hammer's just fallen," Ragged Dane lamented with a shake of his head. "And Alturiak's just begun. We've not got the food." "We'll get out," King Emerus said determinedly.
But Catty Bree felt a quiver in the back of his voice, and in that tremor, in that lament, the image of a battle flashed in the diviner's mind. A fight in a blizzard, Felbar dwarves against a huge force of orcs and giants, and in the midst of a terrible storm. Was it a memory, a premonition? The confusion threw Catty Bree from the scene, and she could not recreate it. She put aside her anger. Wasn't this always the way with divination spells, so full of half-truths and symbols and so divorced from time and space, and stubbornly held to the remaining bits of magic? She saw a torch then, and threw a torch's flame along some dwarven halls. Was it Felbar still? Adbar? Perhaps even the lower reaches of Mithril Hall? Dwarves, shivering and gaunt, their expressions sullen, stalked about as the image of the Undercity widened in Catty Bree's vision. It was not Mithril Hall, and it didn't look much like Felbar either, for it seemed to be partially, at least, above ground. Adbar, she decided. She heard the whimpers behind the doors and windows. She felt the anger, the helplessness, the frustration, the hunger. Most pointedly, the hunger. The city was starving. She saw piles of dwarf bodies, the old and the young, in the town square. That pile of corpses turned insubstantial in front of her, disappearing. But the sense of them remained. She spied a pair of dwarves talking, staggering and bowed, weak with hunger. Catty Bree fell back in her chair and let her spell fly from her. The magic was dissipating anyway, she told herself, though she knew the truth. She couldn't bear to witness any more of this. She sat there for a long while. The feeling of time passing was lost to her, digesting all that she had seen, trying to make sense of it, to separate the images in time, memories from premonitions, and both from the present. She heard the room's door open and felt Drizzt's presence as he entered. We have to find a way out, she said before he got to her.
Confusion and fear followed Regis to the bottom of the river. He scrambled about, trying to find some rock or something that would shield him, then turned back for the lower-ceilinged area, the tight tunnel where their spears could not reach him. But why had they attacked him? It made no sense. A spear stabbed into the river bottom immediately in front of him, turning him around in a hurry. What had he done? Why would they attack a naked halfling? And then he remembered that he wasn't a halfling at all, not in appearance at least. He tapped his beret, reverting to his natural form. He began screaming the truth before he resurfaced, though all that came out was an undecipherable grunt and a flood of bubbles. He splashed through the surface, arms waving frantically, screaming wildly, "Wait! Wait!" A flying club was already on the way, though, and it struck him hard and knocked him nearly senseless as he pitched back under the water. He felt himself drifting, then felt a strong hand grab him roughly by the right arm, and up he went, right out of the water, to be hoisted roughly and unceremoniously onto the bank. He fell down hard, half-conscious after the hit to the head, and he nearly swooned. The jolting had moved that dastardly spearhead, sending waves of agony flowing through his little frame. "Wait! Wait!" he begged. He heard stirring all around him, heard voices, though they seemed very distant. One voice rang out above all, silencing the din, and soon after came a second voice, a chanting refrain. Regis felt the warmth of magical healing washing over him, inviting him back to the realm of the living. Breathing easier, the waves of pain subsiding, the dizziness straightening, great relief overwhelming him, he managed to open his eyes. He sucked in his breath again, feeling a sword tip at his throat. His gaze rode up the blade, gleaming silver in the torchlight, so near and ready to murder him until it settled on the swordsman. Or swordswoman, actually, he realized as she came into focus, with her long dark hair, wide, shining brown eyes, and a frame that exuded strength and health. "You should explain yourself, halfling," she said to him. "Or goblin."
"Halfling," he squeaked.
"Goblin when he first came up," some other man said.
"Disguise,"
whispered Regis, and he managed to turn one hand up to point at his blue beret.
"Magical hat."
"Prove it," said the swordswoman.
Regis slowly moved his hand up and tapped the beret and became a goblin once more. The woman gasped. They all did, and more than a few growled. Regis quickly pulled the hat from his head and immediately reverted to his natural halfling form.
"My name is Regis," the halfling said quietly. "A friend of King Conorad and of Drizzt O'Erden."
"Drow friend," he heard someone say, and heard, too, several people spitting.
"No," Regis blurted. "I fought in Nesme, fought against the drow and the orcs and—"
The woman retracted her sword and helped him to sit up. And still he winced, for though the priest had helped him a bit, he still had a spearhead sticking in his shoulder.
"How did you get here?" she asked.
"We went from Mithril Hall to bring aid to Nesme," he explained. "We didn't make it. The way to Mithril Hall is blocked. We tried to get to Citadel Felbar."
"You are a long way from Citadel Felbar," said the woman.
"I don't know where I am."
"Well, if you are who you say you are, then know that you are among friends," the woman said, sliding her sword away.
"None I would have expected to find down here."
"We are all who remain of Sundabar," the woman explained. "I am Knight Captain Elena Brightlance of Silvery Moon, though I served King Firehelm in the siege of Sundabar and was there when the city fell. We fled through the granaries to the Everfire Caverns, and here we are, settled in the dark ways of the Underdark."
"Sundabar fell,"
Regis mouthed, nodding.
"Yes, we heard that. That's why we tried for Mithril Hall. We knew Nesme could not hold."
He paused and looked at the woman curiously.
"But that was months ago."
Elena nodded grimly.
"My friend has healing spells," she said. "Let him tend to your wound."
Regis started to nod, but stopped suddenly and held up his hand, even grabbed the priest to stop the spell.
"My friend,"
he explained.
He will need your spell more than I.
Friend, the priest said. He turned for the river.
Through the tunnel downstream, Regis explained. I concealed him with stones. I must get back to him.
He started to rise, but Elena put her hand on his shoulder.
You have a friend back beyond the tunnel? She asked,
and she turned to regard the cleric curiously.
It is a long swim, he confirmed.
How did you get through? She asked Regis.
Upstream, even.
What other magic have you about yourself, Regis of Nesme?
None,
he blurted.
Well, not much. I am of Aglarond, a town called Delphuntal on the shores of the Sea of Fallen Stars. I made coin as a deep diver, oysters and pearls. This is not so long a swim for me.
Doubtful expressions loomed all around him.
How many friends are on the other side?
Alina asked at length.
Just one. We must hurry, I beg.
Elena looked at the priest, then nodded.
How many?
The priest turned and called off to some others, then a few moments later reported.
We have 5 enchantments we can offer at this time.
You and me, then,
Elena said, and she began stripping off her gear.
One for the halfling.
What enchantment?
Regis asked.
To breathe under the water, the priest explained.
I don't need it, but my friend will.
It is a long swim, Elena reminded him.
One I just made, and I was not moving fast.
Torvach, then,
Elena said, motioning to a large man nearby, and he too began stripping his gear.
Perhaps you should not go, Knight Captain, the priest offered. It could be a trap.
If it is, you'll be glad to have me beside you, the woman answered.
Now wearing only a slight undergarment, she belted on her sword once more. A short while later, the group entered the river, tied together with a long tether. The priest held a small dagger he had enchanted with magical light. With the current behind them, they were back in the small cavern in a short time, and Regis led the way onto the bank, rushing up the tunnel. The others, with swords and mace in hand, were close behind. As they neared the tomb Regis had constructed to protect Wulfgar, the halfling's hopes sank. It had been opened, stones tossed aside.
Wulfgar,
he breathed, then started a call, but Alina clapped him on the shoulder and motioned him to silence.
He was here,
Regis insisted.
He still is,
came a voice from up ahead. And Wulfgar came into the tunnel, mighty Aegis Fang in hand. He came into the light, and Regis grimaced at the sight. The tall man was filthy and covered in dried blood, his wolfskin cloak matted and torn. New blood showed on his forehead where he had cracked it on the stone lintel.
Unsettling it is to awaken in a grave, he said to his friend.
He wasn't looking at Regis, though, but at the others, particularly at the woman.
I didn't want them to find you, Regis replied.
Them?
Wulfgar asked, staring still at the woman.
The drow and the orcs,
Regis said, and he turned to Alina.
Not them.
He tried to meet Wulfgar's gaze once more and explained.
Refugees from Sundabar.
His voice trailed off, as he realized Wulfgar wasn't really paying attention and was looking past him to Alina. The halfling considered her as well and understood his friend's interest. The shapely woman's minimal clothing clung to her every curve. Her brown hair was matted, of course, but that only made the woman's round brown eyes seem all the larger. Despite her trials in the Underdark these months from Sundabar, Alina Brightlance exuded health and solidity.
There will be time for this later. Let us be gone from this place, the woman said, clearly noticing Wulfgar's gaze.
She had met it with her own. She motioned to the priest, who moved to Wulfgar and began to cast a spell.
Water breathing,
Regis explained.
You'll need it.